What does the Bible say about where and in what order we should worship? And I would like to think about that first this evening. Before we get into the heart of that question, though, let me just say this, that the worship assemblies of the first century would not have been significantly different than what we do today. Fundamentally, they did the same things that we do. They had prayer, according to 1 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 8. They had singing, according to Hebrews chapter 2 and verse 12. They observed the Lord's Supper, 1 Corinthians 11, 23 through 26. There was a time of preaching, according to Acts chapter 5 and verse 42, as well as Acts chapter 20 and verse 7 and following. And there was giving involved, where they gave of their means, 1 Corinthians chapter 16, verses 1 and 2. They had to have done these activities in some kind of order. We don't know exactly what order they did them in, but they wouldn't have done them all at the same time. Each one of these activities would have needed a certain time for them to accomplish without a great deal of confusion going on. And we're going to see that the church in Corinth did have some confusion going on as we study further on this issue. The one additional element that they had in their assemblies, which we do not have in our assembly today, is the practice or exercise of certain spiritual gifts, such as speaking in tongues or prophesying or healing someone, something along those lines. And we do not have those spiritual gifts today. That's a separate question. If you'd like to ask why we don't have spiritual gifts, put that in the box. I'll be happy to answer that. But that's not what I'm talking about tonight. So we'll talk about that some other time. But in 1 Corinthians 12 through 14, the Apostle Paul addresses the abuse of these spiritual gifts or these miracles in the worship assembly. And he concludes his exhortation to the church in Corinth about this topic with a overarching principle that we would do well to follow today also. 1 Corinthians chapter 14 and verse 40 says this, "Let all things be done decently and in order." And so there's the basic principle by which we should order our worship service today. That is, as long as it is being done decently and in order, then we can have the order of worship in just about any way that we would like to have it. Now, some congregations prefer to have a very specific order of worship. And here at this congregation, we have a very specific order of worship, and we never deviate from that, and that's just fine. In other congregations I've been in, the order of worship has been up to the song leader. And the song leader decided what the order of worship was going to be. That's okay as well. And it could change from Sunday to Sunday, the specific order of worship. That's okay also. As long as it is done decently and in order, there's not a problem. And so, but some brethren have taken this verse to mean that the worship assembly must be conducted in a very specific order, and that that order must never change. That's not what Paul is saying here. He's talking about doing things in an orderly way, in a way that is correct and fitting, and that doesn't produce confusion, because God is not the author of confusion, but of peace. The same chapter says here, 1 Corinthians 14. And so because that's the way it is, we can have the Lord, we could have the Lord's Supper before the sermon. We could have the Lord's Supper after the sermon, whether Sunday morning or Sunday night. Here we have it before the sermon on Sunday morning. We have it after the sermon on Sunday night. Either one of those would be fine at either time. At a congregation that I was with in Arkansas, they had the Lord's Supper after the Sunday morning sermon for a specific reason, There was a chicken plant there, and there were some members who worked at that chicken plant. They had shift work that they had to do, and so they couldn't get off to have an early meeting with the saints, and so they would not get off until later toward lunchtime, and then they would come in, and by the time we were done with the preaching, they were already present, and then we could have the Lord's Supper, and that way they were included in having the Lord's Supper with us, so that they could get off during their shift work and come and participate in that aspect of worship, as well as with the other aspects of worship that they could attend as well. And so, it's not the specific order that matters, but whether it is conducted in an orderly way. And that's what Paul is talking about here. The worship assembly at Corinth was being conducted in a disorderly way. Every group and these special groups that they had, these sects that they had developed in Corinth, one says, I'm a Paul, another I'm Apollos, another I'm a Cephas. Each one of those little groups were separating themselves and conducting their own little worship service in the same area. And so one would have the Lord's Supper over here, and they would have an abundance, and another would have the Lord's Supper over here, and they'd hardly have anything. And then they were, one group would be shouting and screaming, with speaking in tongues, and another group would be over here prophesying, and then there would be another group in the back doing something else. They were not united as a congregation. That was the problem there. And they all wanted to do their own thing when they came together in the worship assembly. And that's what Paul talks about here in 1 Corinthians chapter 14, starting in about verse 26. Look at what he says. How is it then, brethren, whenever you come together, each of you has a psalm, has a teaching, has a tongue, has a revelation, has an interpretation. In other words, they were all coming together and they were all doing what they were doing all at the same time. Now you can imagine how confusing that would be. If I were over here in this corner trying to conduct a little class, and then Jim was speaking in tongues, and Scott was back there prophesying to his family, and then we had others who were back in the back talking and saying, well, what in the world's going on over here? And somebody came in and said, I needed to be healed. And so Brother Weaver gets up and he lays hands on him. It would be confusing, wouldn't it? You can see how that would be difficult. It would be not decently and in order. It wouldn't be that way. But that's what was happening. And so look at what Paul says here in verse 27. He says, if anyone speaks in a tongue, let there be two or at the most three each in turn, and let one interpret. So if you're going to have somebody speaking in tongues in this special assembly that they had where miracles were conducted, it needs to be one at a time, and then you got to have an interpreter for each one of those persons so that the whole assembly can be edified. Look at verse 29. Let two or three prophets speak, and let the others judge. In other words, you get two or three who want to prophesy, and you let them prophesy, and no more than that. And then they should take turns as well. It shouldn't all be done at the same time. And then, if anything is revealed to another who sits by, verse 30 says, let the first keep silent. So, after you've had your turn, you're done. You don't need to get up again. Let somebody else prophesy for a while is the idea here. And so there's an order to this that Paul wanted them to respect. And that's why he says in verse 30, for God is not the author of confusion, but of peace. Now notice this, as in all the churches of the saints. And so this doing things decently and in order was to apply to everyone, all the churches. And so that includes us as well, since we are a church of the saints. All right? So these principles of orderliness and peace must guide any decisions that we make in regard to the worship service. And now, in addition to that, there was within the question kind of the notion of well, what is different about our worship service and about their worship service? And the only thing I could really come up with was that they tended to meet in rented rooms as opposed to, or in houses as opposed to owned church buildings. Now, there isn't anything wrong with owning a church building or anything like that, but we don't see any specific example or instance of that in the New Testament. We do note that worship services were conducted in people's homes, and there's several references to that in Romans 16:5, 1 Corinthians 16:9, Colossians 4:15, and Philemon 1 and verse 2. And there's also references to worship services being conducted in upper rooms of buildings. And these upper rooms were typically guest rooms or hired rooms, rooms that could be hired out. And we see examples of that in Acts 9 and verse 20, Acts 13 and verse 5, and Acts 13 and verse 14, and then some other passages in the book of Acts. Oh, I'm sorry, I got my list wrong there. That was for synagogues. But upper rooms were Mark 14, 14 through 15, Acts 1 and verse 13, and Acts 20 and verse 8. And then we note that Paul, when he went into a new town to preach the gospel, would often preach in a synagogue. He would meet in the synagogue, and it may have been that some met in the synagogue on Sunday when it wasn't being used by the Jews because the Jews used it on Saturday. And those are the passages I just read a moment ago, Acts 9, 20, 13, 5, 13, 14, 14, 1, 18, 4, and 19, 8. Now, synagogues were structures that were owned by the Jewish community. And so this model of assembling would have been familiar to Jewish Christians as well as Gentiles who favored Judaism. And so the synagogue model of worship probably affected the model of worship as far as the order and things like that of early New Testament Christians as well.